It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal, to help you score more fantasy points.
Hey, guys, and welcome to the Week 6 edition of the Fantasy Points XFL Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Tribby, and I've got Chris Wecht here by my side to help us break down every angle of the Week 6 XFL slate. And guys, this is a very special week because we have a very special guest, our first guest of the season, actually, Justin Freeman from Run the Sims. Justin is a spring football and DFS legend. He's a showdown expert, an outstanding DFS player, and the founder of Run the Sims, one of the best sites in the world for DFS tools. Justin, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today? And how'd you fare in week 5 DFS?
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate any show that has an awesome intro that gets a little bit of the music, you know, get the blood flowing through the veins a little bit. I just want to run through a brick wall right now after hearing the bass drop and everything, man. Yeah, XFL season's going good. Like I was catching up with Chris just a minute ago offline. Like I started off a little rough, honestly. Like I thought, I think I was overthinking it a little bit in terms of sort of, you know, out-leveling myself in terms of how much to the script you should stick, how contrarian should you get. And like, this is a league we know nothing about. And so I think I was probably playing a bit too contrarian to start with. And now that I've kind of started to hone in on what I think the good plays are, I've had a lot more success. So yeah, last week took down the 222, which was good. The week before that was second in the big GPP. So we're on a heater a little bit right the second, as much of a heater as you can get at XFL. Like the prices aren't massive or anything, right? But no, like at least it feels like the hard work's paying off.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you on when you're in the middle of a heater. Chris, how about you? How'd you fare in week 5?
Week 5 was rough for me. It felt like a classic spring football slate where just like three quarterbacks get replaced with their backups. One of them doesn't even take a snap. We've got Morgan Ellison on the, you know, listed as active, is basically break glass in case of emergency player. These weeks are going to happen in the XFL, and you just gotta roll with them sometimes.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I had a great week 3, week 4, and then week 5 started off awesome. I did really well on the Thursday night showdown slate, and then just Brett Hundley just killed so many teams for me on the main slate. That was rough. But I don't think people want to hear about these previous weeks. I think they want to hear about these upcoming games. Kicking things off Saturday at 1 p.m., we've got the Seattle Sea Dragons at the Orlando Guardians. Total here is 42.5. Seattle favored by 9.5 points. Before we get into injuries and the fantasy side of things, Justin, I'll throw it over to you first. Do you have any bets that you like for this game?
Well, I've been on the Seattle side of this for a while. I think like even and it opened what, closer to 8 or so, I think. And now it's been bet up to 9.5. So it's probably pushing viability. Like I think if you put yourself in Seattle's shoes, we know Seattle's going to win this game, right? Like, I mean, barring something unforeseen, like we feel pretty confident about that. Now, if you're Seattle, like you don't stop, you know, you don't let off the, you don't go non-relentless until you have a 2-score lead, right? And even those, like we've seen, are not sacred in the XFL. Like you're not immune once you get the 2-score lead, thanks to the pretty cool like 4th and 15 conversion rule. But yeah, so I think there's, you have to like sort of challenge what you think a key number is. Like, I mean, we're used to this in the NFL, like 3s and 7s, you know, those are kind of the increments that we focus on. And when numbers sort of approach those, you know, they kind of trigger different sides of the bet. Now here, I think key numbers are somewhat irrelevant. But if you do want to tell yourself a story, they probably exist around increments of 9. And so I think I still like the Seattle side. I mean, they are playing really good ball now, not only offensively, but their defense has really stepped up. Orlando's got some answers, I think, at the quarterback position finally. So that's encouraging for them. However, I still make them probably closer to like 10 or 11 or 12, you know, in terms of what I think a fair spread on this game should be.
Yeah, I'm pretty torn here. I grabbed Seattle -8 when it opened, and I feel pretty good about that. At the same time, though, I mean, I do think Dormady changes things for Orlando and really makes them competitive. It's been interesting too, seeing like, it seems like every week Orlando just opens as an 8-point dog for whatever reason, regardless of opponent. So I think that's pretty strange. I actually don't hate the Orlando side. If you think Dormady's legit, I'm still up in the air about that. Chris, what do you think? Any bets for this game?
Yeah, I mean, it really does come down to what you think about Dormady. It's such a small sample from what we've seen from him, but he looks legit. I mean, I don't hate the taking the points with Orlando at 9.5. I think there's some potential leverage there, but it really does come down to what you think of Dormady in such a small sample from what we've seen so far. And Seattle's defense has been good, so.
Yeah, definitely a tricky spot. On the fantasy side of things, we will start with Seattle. I mean, you know, we know they're going to throw. We know Ben DiNucci can run, and he's passing pretty well. He's, I believe, tied with AJ McCarron right now for the positional lead in fantasy points per game. You know, the only problem with DiNucci and this Seattle passing attack is that they're really expensive. They're kind of hard to fit in, especially, you know, DiNucci plus Pearson. You know, it's tough. So Chris, I'll start with you here. How do you think you're going to handle Seattle? Because it feels a lot like previous weeks where, you know, we kind of know they're a good play and they're going to be popular. So, what do you think?
Yeah, they're definitely a good play. There's definitely some salary saver options that can help you fit them in. But I think what we kind of say every week with them kind of is the same this week. Just be mindful of like how you're stacking them. And if you do DiNucci, Pearson, like you're going to tie up a bunch of salary and be pretty high in ownership just from doing that combo right there. So, and then really with Damian Willis kind of getting into the mix pretty strongly last week, now you've got kind of a logjam at wide receivers 2 through 4 with, because even Josh Gordon's snap or routes are going down. Blake Jackson's are still pretty strong, so we know he'll be out there. But between Willis, Gordon, VZ, Juwan Green, you're kind of guessing, but all have chances to score. And likely there's going to be guys getting in the end zone that are going to pay off at their salaries.
Yeah, for sure. Justin, I'm curious, how are you at all concerned about Josh Gordon? I mean, we've seen his routes decline every single week this season. At the end of last week's game, Ben DiNucci like cursed him out and was basically like, we got to get this guy off the field. You know, he didn't, yeah. I'm not sure if he ran the wrong route or just gave up on a route too early. But DiNucci was really upset, and it seems like they're kind of phasing out Gordon for the trio of Damian Willis, Jordan VC, and Juwan Green. What's your take on Josh Gordon, and do you have a preference between, you know, VC, Green, and Willis? Because they're all pretty similarly priced and project, you know, pretty close.
I mean, I think Gordon's a terrible play each and every week, honestly. He matches like none of the things you're looking for in terms of like peripheral numbers for projecting a wide receiver, except for the fact he's Josh Gordon. And whenever he feels like going into Superman mode, like he can do what he did. What was it, week 3? I think the week he went backpedaling into the end zone for that monster game. So it's like you just have to ask yourself, if you're going to play, say, 20 lineups or 5 lineups, like, do you want to make one of them Josh Gordon? For me, I'm playing 150 usually most weeks, and I'm not mandating any Josh Gordon. And so if I get burnt, like I get burnt, and I'm fine with that. Like his, you know, he still costs a fortune. So I feel like I can make up those points elsewhere if I do get burnt. This is obviously the early game. This is the first game of the slate. So, you know, part of the great thing here is, you know, you miss out on Josh Gordon, you still have time, you still have roster spots to go after and attack the rest of your roster and try to climb back. And, you know, maybe you're dead to first if Gordon has a Gordon game, but you can still definitely work your way towards a min cash in that scenario. And I'm fine with just losing on weeks where Josh Gordon goes off, because I think that, like you mentioned, there are some guys really starting to escalate their way up the depth chart. You know, Jordan Vesey, there's a little bit of concern there because his routes have slightly dipped in the last 2 weeks, but you are seeing Damian Willis. Like, to me, he's the star emerging in this offense. That's the guy I want to buy in on the ground floor. I would imagine, like in most projection systems, he's going to be popping pretty good. Like, he's points per dollar wise, he grades out really well. He's in the stack of the week that you want to, you know, attack. If you just play offense versus Orlando every week, like, that's been pretty profitable so far. So sometimes you don't have to overthink it. Take the free square. I would be perfectly happy going double stacks, you know, with Pearson and Damian Willis mixed in, you know, maybe a little bit of Juwan Green in there as well. I know he's on the injury report too, but just know this ball could really go anywhere. And you kind of need a little bit of a ceiling outcome for Pearson, a guy who hasn't had really a nose for the end zone so far, but is just like PPR monster.
Yeah. And I mean, Pearson, like, he clearly has the skills to bust off some, you know, some super long plays. So I'm kind of with you there. I think Damian Willis would probably be my favorite. But I mean, VC and Juwan Green are fine. I did gloss over injuries here, but there really isn't too much to worry about for this game. The big news being that Morgan Ellison is out. Juwan Green was limited in practice with a hip issue, but he's listed as probable and expected to play. And then there's nothing to worry about on the Orlando side. That kind of leads us nicely into the Seattle backfield, which I have some strong opinions about. I know that, you know, Darius Bradwell is projecting pretty well. We're sort of all fitting him into this Morgan Ellison role. That was, you know, not great because the Seattle backfield pie isn't massive, but I mean, Ellison was running really well and looked to be headed towards, you know, being one of the two or three true bell cows in the league before he got hurt. Justin, I'll start with you here. What's your take on the Seattle backfield scenario with Darius Bradwell and TJ Hammonds working in here?
So I'm of two minds here because Bradwell projects for tons of volume. I also watched Bradwell play a lot last week, and I'm not super football guy when it comes to, you know, hand in the dirt film takes or whatever, but he looked terrible to me. Like, he just was slow and indecisive, rarely made it back to the line of scrimmage before he was getting contact, like seemed to not have a lot of, you know, I guess chemistry with the offensive line and able to sort out where he was supposed to be hitting it. Whereas, like, we've seen Ellison be explosive in that offense. Now, you know, here they are going up against Orlando, a game where there should be a pretty positive script. Bradwell should have opportunities here. But I have real question marks about his ability to be efficient in this game.
Yeah. That was sort of how I wrote it up. I mean, you know, the volume's pretty good, especially at the price. I mean, it's hard. It's basically impossible to project him as, you know, poor value, regardless. But I mean, 1.7 yards per carry on 10 carries last week. Morgan Ellison averaged 5.2 yards per carry. TJ Hammonds, who is not a very physical runner at all, is averaging 5.9 yards per carry in this offense. I mean, with how spread out they are, like, these running backs should be really efficient, and Bradwell just wasn't. I also think, I mean, this is the second least valuable backfield by weighted opportunity, 18.1 weighted opportunity points per game. You could say, oh, well, you know, if we give Bradwell 65% of that, then, you know, we can safely project him for, you know, 12 or so points and feel pretty good about it. I get that, but part of the reason that number got as high as it did was because Morgan Ellison was playing so well. You know, in the first few weeks of the season, Seattle was super pass heavy in the red zone inside the 10. And then Morgan Ellison just emerged as this dominant rushing threat, and they started running a little bit more in the red zone. I think if, you know, if they think Bradwell stinks, which he probably does, I think they're just going to take their foot off the gas, you know, in terms of running the ball and just start chucking it more in the red zone. Chris, do you have any interest in TJ Hammonds? He's only 3,200. He ranks sixth among all running backs and targets. Could maybe get some run at wide receiver. At least to me, he's honestly more interesting for tournaments, because I think Bradwell is going to catch some ownership, and, you know, I see a really low floor there.
Yeah, I'd be fine with playing Hammonds. Just, he's so cheap, only 3,200. We did project Seattle with a slightly higher pass rate and TD pass rate than we have in previous weeks because of Ellison being out for all the reasons that you just said. I kind of wish Bradwell was even a little bit cheaper, because that's probably going to keep his ownership in check from getting, like, way high as some of the other running backs.
Yeah.
And it seems like a good fade spot. Like, it would be a perfect opportunity to play Hammonds or just not play a Seattle back and just get passing weapons instead.
Yeah, that was kind of how I wrote it up. I think I prefer Hammonds, but I think ideally you just avoid this backfield altogether. Do we have any, like, strong takes on what Bradwell's ownership is going to be? I was thinking maybe around 10 or 15%, but I'm really not sure.
I think you've got some sour taste in the mouth from how that situation played out last week. So I think we could really see a pretty wild fluctuating number. I think it'll be discounted to some extent. Yeah. If anybody watched Bradwell, it's funny. I don't know, like, how many people who are playing XFL DFS just fire up the optimizer, optimize the projections and never look at it again versus how many people are actually watching the games. I would have a little bit of a lean probably towards the former, but Yeah, so in that case, like, Bradwell's going to be in projection sets. There's no doubt about it.
Yep, yeah. I'm definitely with you on the watching the games thing. I think a lot of my, like, best calls this season have come from just rewatching a lot of these games, mm-hmm. and, you know, realizing things that maybe, you know, wasn't totally told in the stats. Chris, yeah, do you have a take on Bradwell's ownership before we move on to Orlando?
Yeah, I you know, that 20% range feels right to me, just because of his salary not being so cheap that it's just so easy to fit him in.
Yeah, I mean, you'll have Rod Smith is only 1,100 more. I think people will try to get up to him, but Yeah, I mean, if you're pinching pennies at running back, Bradwell's really your only option. It's so thin below 7K.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the Orlando side of things. We've got everything's clean from an injury perspective, which is great. And it looks like the team finally found a quarterback. We got Quentin Dormady, who looks really good, at least in a very small sample. He's played about four quarters, and he's I wrote it up here. He's scored, let's see what I had. 28.9 DraftKings points per four quarters. Obviously, I don't think that's sustainable, but it is a very good sign considering how incompetent, you know, Paxton Lynch, DeAndre Francois looked back there. I really like Dormady. He's only 6K. Obviously, there's a risk here of a benching. Paxton Lynch is listed as the co-starter, but it was announced that Dormady will start the game. He's like co-QB1, I should say. If Dormady comes out slow, maybe we see some Paxton Lynch. But I think, you know, if you assume Dormady avoids a benching, which if you're playing him in a lineup, I think you have to make that assumption, then it's hard not to like him as a value play. The only thing I'm struggling with is like how popular is he going to be? Justin, I'll throw it over to you first. Yeah. What's your take on Quentin Dormady? Is he, you know, is he just like an absolutely awesome value? And yeah, is he going to be super popular, or maybe more of a mid-tier quarterback in terms of ownership?
Yeah. So what's interesting here is I feel like my answer might change depending on, if this were NFL DFS and you're playing a large field tournament that actually has 10, 20, 50,000 people in it, like real large field, then I think that you probably need an actually good quarterback, somebody who can score fantasy points. You know, you need a DiNucci, you need a McCarron. However, in this scenario, like in XFL DFS, like we've seen, the winning score is nowhere close to optimal most weeks. So like you can get away with just taking your 14 points from Quentin Dormady or whatever that equals, you know, even if he burns you, taking that $4,000 savings that it would have taken to get up to one of those other guys. And now you're playing a three stud wide receiver set instead of a two stud wide receiver set. And at its ceiling, that's worth 15 more points, 30 more points, like a ridiculous number more points. When you're getting able, you know, you're able to put an extra Jeff Bidette in your lineup instead of another, you know, Travis Toivonen or whatever it is. Like, I mean, yeah. So yeah, I think it makes sense construction wise to fit him in. Like he does not have a really good optimal rate, which is one of the first things I look at, in our Run the Sims numbers, you know, only optimal 5.3% of the time. And that's because I don't think he has the ceiling that some of these other guys have. However, we just said, we don't need the optimal lineup to win this thing. And he helps you get to guys who actually can make a difference. We've seen quarterback scoring be pretty flat, and you can overcome a mediocre quarterback performance if your wide receivers really take over from there.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The salary savings is just, I mean, it's such a weapon. And you might only need, 15, 16, 17 points from Dormady to match. I mean, we've seen, a lot of these weeks, what's the high quarterback score? 23, 24, 25 DraftKings points. Mm-hmm. Outside of week three, where pretty much everyone went off. I mean, that seems to be pretty close to normal. Chris, how are you playing Quentin Dormady? And importantly, who are you stacking him with? Because we know Cody Latimer and Lance Lenoir are popping his values. How do you feel about those guys?
Yeah, the Dormady play feels a lot like the Brent Hundley play in week three, where we didn't have full confirmation that he was the starter, but you kind of, and he was around this salary too, if I remember, if you're putting him in a lineup, you're just assuming that he's going to get most, if not all, the game. And in the Hundley case, we got the ceiling outcome. He dropped like 30 DraftKings points. Now, like Justin said, Dormady probably doesn't have a super high chance of hitting that, but there is outcomes where that happens. And not a lot of people are going to play him just because of the benching risk, especially after a week where we saw so many backup QBs play over guys that people thought would be the starter. In terms of the stacking guys, Lance Lenoir definitely feels due. I mean, he's running almost all of the routes. Cody Latimer is solid as well, but getting a little expensive and isn't on the field quite as much as Lenoir. Rambo as well is also on the field a lot, but again, expensive and doesn't really seem like that awesome of a target earner. So Lenoir is definitely my preferred stacking partner with Dormady.
Yeah, I'm with you. I actually wrote up both Lenore and Latimer as just like, look, they have way better quarterback play. So I think like the chances of a true ceiling outcome, I mean, we saw it from Latimer last week, but you know, if we assume Dormady's legit, then I think Lenore at 3,700 is just way too cheap. I like Rambo if you're concerned about ownership in a lineup, because no one's gonna, you know, it's really hard to get there since he's 8K. But yeah, I think we can move on to the backfield. Unless Justin, do you have any additional thoughts on these wide receivers?
Yeah, other than just don't forget about Eli Rogers, $3,600, yeah. $100 cheaper than Lance Lenore, and probably provides you a tremendous ownership discount on Lenore, who is going to pop in, certainly pops a lot more in our stuff for sure. But yeah, just another way to get different. And I don't mind eating chalker. I mean, the great thing, you know, I think you guys have talked about this, is, you know, the sequential order of the games. Like, you can afford to just play it chalky and play it, you know, nice and easy to start with, and get more contrarian with your lineup as the week goes on. Like, you don't have to stick and ride with this one lineup construction all weekend. It's a 3-day weekend, you know, this week. So yeah, keep in mind, you know, you can pick your spots to get different later if you're chasing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great tip. This backfield is pretty gross. We got Jamaine Martin and Devin Darrington splitting reps. Martin led the way in snaps and weighted opportunity as well last week. I mean, this is the least valuable backfield in the XFL. You know, Darrington was a pretty decent value play in week five, but I'm pretty much entirely off him this week now that he's been priced up. Chris, I'll throw it over to you. Do you have any interest in these running backs?
Not really. Yeah, Darrington being priced off, plus did not get, we thought there was a chance he was taking over the backfield last week, and he went back to Martin in Martin's favor. So clearly that was also not the case. Makes it really tough to get either of these guys in your lineup and feel good about it.
Yeah. Justin, any thoughts there?
No, exactly the same. Maybe the first two players that I exiled in my player pool.
All right, easy enough. Moving on to the next game, we've got a two-game Saturday slate. The second game is Saturday at 7 p.m. We have the St. Louis Battlehawks at the Vegas Vipers. Total here is 44.5. I've seen 45.5. This is the highest total of the season. St. Louis favored by 3 points. Guys, before we get into injuries, any bets that we like? Chris, I'll start with you.
I think I would like the under if it does get up to 45 and you see somewhere there. Other than that, I think it's pretty much where I would project the game to be. I don't have a strong lean, but I do like the under the 45 if you see that number.
Justin, how about yourself?
Yeah, I like the St. Louis side of the spread. I like St. Louis by more than 3. Yeah, I'm just a believer that we're starting to find out true identities of these teams pretty well at this point. St. Louis, just clearly a better football team. Obviously, nobody comes into Cashman Field and takes it easy. It takes it on the chin, right? I mean, but no, I think St. Louis should have their way in this game if they want to.
Yeah, I'm with Justin here. I took St. Louis -3. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen this line move a ton. I think if Hundley was the starter, I would be fine with a 3-point line, but with Perez back there, I you know, in my head, I kind of priced this closer to like 4.5. All right. Injuries, not a ton to worry about here. Steven Mitchell, Rod Smith, and Martavis Bryant are all listed as probable. All are expected to play after full Thursday practices, but we will need to keep an eye on these Vegas inactives to see if Geronimo Allison sits with Martavis Bryant back in the fold. It doesn't appear that the new OC wants both guys to be active for whatever reason. I'm really not sure why that is. I think they only have 5 wide receivers on their roster too. So if they make one a healthy scratch, that leaves them with 4 guys. Really strange, but it seems to be the way things are. All right. Starting on the St. Louis side, it kind of feels like the same old with AJ McCarron. I mean, he's a solid play, and you know, with Marcel Aitman out, it's a lot easier to stack him because the wide receiver target shares are more condensed. Justin, how are you going to play AJ McCarron this week?
Yeah, I mean, Hakeem Butler's really popping for me this week. Oh, yeah. I mean, after that like mega target performance that he had last week, just boosts his targets per out run even more. He was already getting massive targets. And he's just clearly the guy in this offense that's going to just move the entire offense down the field. He's who McCarron looks to in a pinch. He's basically, there is no script in which Hakeem Butler isn't the guy AJ McCarron wants to throw the ball to. Knowing that, like, I mean, obviously, I think sort of the level one is, okay, just stack McCarron and Butler. That means you're going to have to get cheap elsewhere. But maybe the sort of Galaxy brain or second level take is then that really opens things up for Darius Shepherd, a guy who we've seen thrive in a game where Hakeem Butler didn't get there. So, yeah, maybe mixing and matching some of these. Austin Prohl's priced at 6,800. You know, he's kind of a little bit of no man's land in terms of price point. So, yeah, maybe, you know, I don't know that you have to go double stacks. I've been relaxing my rules quite a bit so that I could just take single stacks. And if I get a double, that's okay too. But, you know, overall, just trying to smash in as many projected points as possible at this point. So, yeah, I think usual suspects there. But, you know, the guy I'm leaving a light on for there is Stephen Mitchell, 4,300. You know, he's kind of the dark horse guy that can really round out a double stack.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you there. Definitely like all those takes. Darius Shepherd is a guy that I wrote up in quick hits on my article and basically just said, like, look, don't forget about him after the 6-point performance last week, because in week four, he was, you know, had 20 DraftKings points, looked great, was getting deep targets. You know, they throw him screens and stuff. He's, you know, after Butler, he's pretty clearly the wide receiver too here. And yeah, I'm with you on Stephen Mitchell as a solid salary saving option. Chris, do you have any additional takes on these wide receivers?
Nope. I think you guys nailed it. I think Shepard's an awesome leverage play. Butler's also awesome, but, you know, going to be popular.
Yeah. And then the backfield here is pretty straightforward. You know, in these spring leagues, bell cows are extremely rare. I don't think we saw any in the USFL. And I think the original version of the XFL, they, you know, there really weren't any either. Brian Hill, though, is definitely a bell cow. He's only played 3 full games. He averages 14.2 weighted opportunity points per game, which is first among all running backs over the full season. 17.8 DraftKings fantasy points per game, also first among running backs over the full season. 73% snap share in his 3 full games ties Abram Smith for the positional lead, while a 67% route share leads all running backs. And he's been super efficient among running backs with at least 10 carries. He ranks first in yards per carry, first in PFF rushing grade, second in yards after contact per attempt, and fourth in missed tackles forced. He's really good. He's playing a lot. Chris, I'll throw it over to you. You know, I think people, when they're paying up for running back, they're going to have to decide between Brian Hill and Abram Smith. I think we pretty clearly give the edge to Brian Hill this week. How high do you think his ownership is going to get? Because I think everyone, you know, everyone knows that he's, you know, he's a bell cow. He's the guy. Is he going to push 40%? Because I kind of lean yes.
Yeah, I think so too, especially being what's $500 more than Abram Smith. So it's going to
cheaper,
that 500, think, right? Yeah, or yeah, cheaper than Abram Smith. That's going to get, let people do a little bit more with their other roster spots. And plus, whatever happens with Reichwell Armstead matters a lot for Abram Smith as well. But so in scenarios where Reichwell is active, that definitely makes Hill like the clear and favorite best projected running back on the slate. And he's cheaper than Abram Smith. I think he's also cheaper than Borgie as well. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
He is. So yeah, he's going to be popular. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Justin, how are you going to handle this? I mean, are you just going to kind of like ride with the field and, you know, maybe play, you know, 35-45% Brian Hill, or are you going to try to get, you know, way overweight given that his, you know, his workload is just so awesome?
I probably will be overweight. I mean, he just makes so much sense. And, you know, I think some of the best builds that you can build are going to be one running back builds. And so that just leads you to the best plays even more. You know, obviously you talk about what your other options are on that price point. You've got Abram Smith, you got Brian Hill, you got Borgie right there. Borgie is just, he's not going to project super well. Like, I mean, you know, there is a ceiling there. It's just tough to bake it all in, you know, given how many other mouths are in that backfield and what else is going on, which we'll hop into during that last game. But yeah, like you just go team by team. Davion Smith, not excited about him. Kalen Ballage, injured and not excited about him. Rod Smith, I mean, maybe like he might be the first guy that at least makes me think, all right, I definitely want some exposure there. But yeah, like I'm totally fine just, you know, it's like a barbell thing. Like I need the guaranteed points, or you better offer me like some tremendous salary savings where even if you get me, you know, 5.5 DraftKings points, like I'm not dead. I just punted the position much the way, like, you know, you can punt tight end in DFS NFL. Like, I mean, sometimes you can get away with that at a, you know, at borderline min price. And so, you know, maybe it's maybe that's how Hammonds gets in there, that sort of thing. So, yeah, no, I'm perfectly fine just saying Brian Hill, take me to the promised land. I know he's chalky, but he's chalky for a reason, and he's been efficient. Workload's there. Everything looks good for Brian Hill. And what's crazy to me is, like, he's been super efficient, and the other running backs in the offense have been super inefficient. Like, they've been terrible. You know, Mateo Durant has not been looking good. Kareem Walker, not looking good. And so it's even more impressive for Brian Hill, a guy who was, you know, a pretty mediocre towards the late in his career NFL type player.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you there. I think because, you know, the salary saving options are so thin, I'll probably end up being overweight on a guy like Hill. Yeah, it's just really hard not to love him as a play. Yeah. All right, moving on to the Vegas side of things. We've got Luis Perez kind of rivaling Quentin Dormady as the, like, discount QB option. I mean, he's only played, you know, two full games this season, and he's averaging a little bit more than 23 DraftKings points per game, which would actually lead all quarterbacks. I'm not sold on Perez as a talent. I've seen this guy play a lot of spring football, and I don't think he's that good. I mean, he's just like an okay spring football quarterback. I put him in the same camp as, like, Jordan Te'amu. Chris, I'll throw it over to you. How are you going to handle Luis Perez this week? And yeah, what Vegas receivers are you looking at?
Yeah, I'm curious what you guys think the percent chance that we see Hundley in this game at all. I mean, are they locked in with Perez at this point? That's the tough part to figure out with this, because he does project as a decent value, and Vegas just always is playing from behind, it seems like. So they're
their defense is bad.
Yeah, and then they're constantly throwing. It's like a volume play at QB, basically. You're not playing for efficiency. He just gets it done solely on volume. I'll probably have some Perez just because I don't think anybody else is going to want to play him. But I'm definitely not going to go crazy with it because I'd probably like Dormady better, and I don't think Dormady's ownership gets out of hand either. Yeah. And the receiver-wise, Bidette, we all know, is an awesome play in all lineups, whether he's, you know, stacking or not. And then it gets pretty tricky. Like you said earlier, we got to see what happens with Allison and Martavis Bryant. We thought Matthew Sexton was going to be an awesome play last week and just totally didn't happen at all. Yeah. And so the other guys are, you know, you can toss them in if you're playing, you know, over 20 lineups. But if you're playing a few lineups, don't really recommend forcing them in there.
Yeah, I think if we assume one of Allison or Bryant sits, I mean, Cinque Sweeting pops as a pretty decent value play. And he's actually looked pretty good. I mean, just from the eye test, like, I actually think he's a decently talented player. And they seem to want to get him more involved, you know, as the weeks have gone on. I think the new OC likes him. Yeah, Justin, what's your take on Luis Perez ownership and, yeah, any of these wide receivers you really like?
Yeah, I mean, I think we go with the assumption Perez starts. That's sort of item number one. And then I think he's the favorite to play this entire game. I think if he were to have a multi-turnover type session, you definitely see Hundley, I think, come in at that point. But something weird's going on with Hundley. Like, I hate to read the tea leaves too much, but, like, his demeanor on the sidelines is, like, very aloof and out of it. And I just wonder whether he's been benched and is not super fond of that or what's going on. I mean, obviously there was the weird usage thing that happened prior where he had been removed early in the game. What was that, week 4? And yeah, so ever since then, there's been something that's not quite right in that situation. So definitely proceed with caution. But I think, obviously, if you're playing Luis Perez in your lineup, you're banking on him having a good game. And so long as he stays on a good trajectory, he's got a chance to be in an optimal lineup for sure. And I love the fact that his, you know, target tree is super concentrated. You'll have a lot of information once inactives come out as to where those could potentially end up. I'm a big Cinque Sweeting fan. Like, I think he looks great. I mean, I don't know how he's not earning more routes at this point, but maybe he is the reason that, you know, one of Bryant or Allison has been inactive for the past couple of weeks. Would love to see him take the next step, get some more routes, be a full-time player. He's not quite there yet, and it makes it really tough to project him heading into the week. You know, somebody is likely to be inactive. We're, you know, not guaranteed for sure, but in that case, like, you just have to be nimble throughout the course of the week to put the right guy in there. And it's tough. Yeah, it's tough to play Allison or Bryant You know, it's kind of like the Josh Gordon principle. Like, these guys are NFL talents. They're probably knocking on the door of a big game. We saw Geronimo Allison see quite a few targets last week. It could happen, but I think you can safely bet against that unless you're like super trying to be super contrarian and chase points from after the Saturday early game.
Yeah, I'm moderately interested in, you know, either of Allison or Bryant if one is inactive, but it's really just to, you know, try to get like a super low owned guy on one of my teams. I'm with you. I think Perez, you know, more likely than not just plays this entire game. And yeah, I have no idea what's going on with Hundley. I think Hundley is like clearly the better quarterback, but you know, in week four, I think he got pulled due to injury. He was looking super gimpy. And then, you know, I believe he logged full practices leading into week five, which was why, you know, we thought he would start. Vegas had him listed as the starter. And then, you know, he doesn't play a snap. And, you know, this week, not even on the injury report. So he's fully healthy. And I think we're all just assuming Perez at this point. I mean, the guy's the highest paid player in the XFL and he's not getting on the field. It's just so weird. But yeah, I think we're banking on Luis Perez. The backfield, though, since the offensive coordinator change happened, has certainly gotten a little more concentrated and at least a little more juicy for fantasy purposes. Chris, I'll start with you here. Rod Smith actually projecting decently well and is only 6,600. Do you have any interest?
Yeah, it does seem to be getting more of the workload. It's not as much of a three-headed backfield as it was. He got up to 58% of the carries last week, which is pretty, you know, pretty solid for XFL standards anyway. I don't think he's super talented. I mean, he's not super efficient, but he's not as bad as some of the other running backs in the league either. So, I mean, for his price, I think he's totally fine to use. He is, 6,600. So, you know, there's not a lot of guys in that range you're going to feel awesome about. So I think he's a solid play.
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, once you get below like Brian Hill, I mean, it's hard to find a lot of running backs that are solid. And, you know, the salary saving options are pretty thin. So you could even argue Rod Smith is like kind of a salary saving option. He led all running backs in weighted opportunity last week, had 7 red zone rushes, which is, you know, quite a few. Justin, how are you playing this backfield? And I'm curious on, I had this thought last night. I almost included it in my article, decided to take it out. Is John Lovett in play at all if you're like planning on a St. Louis onslaught? Cause he is catching some passes, but I kind of lean no there. I am curious on your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's a no. He could be a sneaky person to like pair with Perez or something like that, but no, I don't think I'll be getting to love it. I tend to want to eliminate all but one running back from each team, sort of as we create the player pool for the week. So I'm not getting there, but yeah, I think you guys covered Rod Smith pretty well. Like, it's tough not to be overreactionary, but in XFL where the sample sizes are so small, I think you have to adjust quickly to the sort of new role change. And especially if you can chalk that up to the fact that they have had turnover at the offensive coordinator position, then it makes sense. Like, yeah, they've made some sort of commitment here to Rod Smith. You're hoping that he can, you know, just sort of get in from short yardage. Like, I don't think he's a super explosive guy. I'm not going to feel good about having him in the lineup. You know, it's really, you're just playing him so that you can get up to your better options elsewhere.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I think maybe you could argue for Lovett on like a 2-game slate, but you know, even then it feels a little thin. But yeah, I mean, Rod Smith absolutely in play. Ownership I think will be interesting there. I'd imagine probably around 15%. And at least personally, I'll probably line up with the field. I'm not sure if you guys have any takes there.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, same here. That feels about right.
All right, great. Okay, so moving on to our only game on Sunday. This is the second leg of the coveted XFL back-to-back. We get to see the San Antonio Brahmas at the Arlington Renegades for the second week in a row. The total here is a very juicy 33 points. Arlington is favored by 3. This game kicks off Sunday at 3 p.m. Guys, are there any bets you like here? Chris, I'll start with you.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it hits the under of 33 points. So I have no problems if you want to take that. And then I do like the San Antonio side a little bit better. But, you know, it's not great. It's not fun betting on these two teams.
Yeah. I kind of line up with you there where I feel like, you know, these teams are pretty even. That kind of makes me like San Antonio and the points. And I mean, after what we saw last week, I just can't imagine anyone is taking the over. Justin, do you have a take on this game?
Yeah, for me, it'd be San Antonio moneyline. Just take the extra, you know, juice that you can get on that side of the equation. I think this is a coin flip game. I think it was a coin flip game last week. I don't think home field is going to swing a ton. Like, as much as like the San Antonio faithful were like jacked up for week one, I think the air is out of that balloon a little bit. So, you know, it can go either way. I'm interested to see if San Antonio makes any kind of like systematic changes. They've got some injuries and some roster turnover things going on there that are some interesting angles.
Yeah, we have a lot to get through with injuries for this game. Reed Sinnett, who looked pretty good last week and I thought was playing his way into becoming their starting quarterback, unfortunately broke his foot. He's probably done for the season. The team signed Kirk Benkert, who spent some time with the Packers, to be their quarterback three for now. I believe Benkert also spent time with the 49ers. He could be interesting. I think there's a decent argument to be made that he may be better than Jack Cohn, but he's the quarterback three for now. Juwan Pass is expected to be the quarterback two for week six. I wouldn't anticipate we see much of Juwan Pass. I mean, maybe they get him in for a drive or two, but we're probably looking at Jack Cohn for almost all this game. San Antonio cut Jalen Tolliver and Darice Roberson, which was pretty surprising. Tolliver was re-signed though. And then we have Travis Johnson, who did not participate in Thursday's practice with a back injury. He looks pretty questionable. Travis Tovenin did not participate in Thursday's practice with a head injury. He also looks questionable. Kalen Ballage limited on Thursday's practice with an Achilles injury. Certainly concerning and definitely something to monitor there. I wouldn't be shocked if Ballage actually sat out of this game, which would obviously open things up for Jaquez Patrick, you know, quite a bit. And I believe this is the RB3, John Hilleman. You know, he could get some additional run there too. On the Arlington side, they put Kenneth Farrow on injured reserve. Letty Brown and Brian Harrion are listed as the backups to Davion Smith. I would expect pretty close to a bell cow workload for Davion Smith. You know, we'll see how things shake out, but Davion Smith is definitely going to dominate the backfield for now. I think we can get through this game pretty quick, guys. Chris, I'll start with you on the San Antonio side. How are you going to handle this passing attack? I can't imagine we're looking at Jack Cohn very much for the four-game slate. But maybe, you know, I think we could, especially with the injuries, we could see some values emerge at wide receiver. Do you have any interest here?
Yeah, I think TJ Vasher of the wide receivers is a decent value play. He's super cheap. He's actually been on the team for the whole season. He's going to run most of the routes. Other than him, I mean, you can take your shots with like a Fred Brown. The Tolliver situation is so bizarre, but he's probably too expensive. Akers is way too expensive. So it's pretty much Vasher or nothing else for me from the passing attack.
Yeah, another note I should add, the team also activated, who is it? Yeah, Calvin Turner Jr. From the reserve list. Hines Ward spoke about him as if he was very excited to get this, you know, versatile receiving weapon on the team. He's listed as a running back, though, and is 5,500. I mean, I don't think you can get there this week. I'm kind of with you, Chris. I mean, Vasher is really the only guy I'm interested in. No one's going to play him. I mean, I think he's kind of interesting if you need like a 1% owned guy because, you know, I mean, 300 more and you get to Lance Lenoir, 700 more and you get to Justin Smith. Like no one's going to make it there. Justin, how are you handling these wide receivers? I mean, it's just such a disaster.
I love the fact that our bar for qualifying an athlete for the first two games was earns targets, got a productive role, looks efficient. And now it's like, guy's been on the team all season. Like that's the minimum bar for being in the conversation for San Antonio. And I think that speaks volumes. So yeah, like this is clearly a situation where you're only going here to fill out the last spot on your roster based on how many dollars you have left. And so that's how a Fred Brown or an Alize Mack or a TJ Vasher ends up in your lineup. You know, Sal Canella is still overpriced at 7,600. Like, gosh, you feel like he's kind of close. Like he gets some targets. They're just such low quality targets that they're not worth anything. So it's tough to get there with him. But yeah, it's just playing roulette. Now the Patrick angle is a interesting one and maybe one to go ahead and build for now. Like, I mean, we may not get all the information we need. This is going to be the Sunday game. I guess we should have a decent idea. We'll get a Friday practice report at least on Kalen Ballage, but there's nothing wrong with playing Jaquez Patrick. And then really you could keep him in there at 5K and just play the angle. Even if Kalen Ballage is active he's active, but he's, you know, like Morgan Ellison, break glass in case of emergency. These rosters are thin. It's not like they have 100 other guys to go to. So I don't mind sprinkling him into lineups. It's tough to get there with Davion Smith, a guy who gets volume, but gosh, is that a super inefficient role? You know, 7,800, it's tough to justify getting there when you could play Brian Hill or Abram Smith for not too much more than that.
Yeah, I'm with you on Jaquez Patrick. I think that's an interesting angle. On the teams where I put Patrick in there and I anticipate Ballage to be out, I'm probably going to try to leave some salary on the table so that, you know, just in case I could get up to a guy like Bryson Alline. I think I definitely prefer him to Patrick, you know, should Ballage play. Chris, do you have any takes on this backfield before we get to the Arlington side of things?
No, I think that's right. It's tricky to, there's not a lot of games in the Monday game that you can easily get to without leaving a lot of salary on the table. Alline is probably the closest. So just be mindful of that if you do want to roll the dice on Patrick.
Yeah. And because it's the third game of the slate, I mean, if Ballage is ruled out, like Patrick's still going to be 5%. Like I'd be shocked if he's double digits. No one's going to get there. So I think building lineups as if Kalen Ballage isn't playing is, you know, it's going to be a pretty unique angle. At the same time though, I mean, this backfield has been so inefficient that Patrick could, you know, see 80% of the backfield usage and score like 6 DraftKings points. So, it's still not the nut spot, even if you play a bunch of Patrick and Ballage is ruled out. All right, moving on to the Arlington side. Justin, I'm really curious on your take of the quarterback situation here. Do you think there's a risk Kyle Sloter could get benched? I mean, right now we're projecting as if Sloter's going to play the whole game. I mean, I could certainly be convinced that it should be, you know, maybe a 90-10 split. It feels really dicey. And then, you know, from there, are there any Arlington pass game options you're interested in? I know you mentioned Sal Cannella earlier.
Yeah, we may be a little aggressive in how we have it capped currently, but I think the mid-game benching possibility for Sloter was real last week, and it's definitely real this week. I mean, this team needs a spark, and I don't know whether, you know, it's definitely Plitt. Like, I've heard people starting to float out. Was it Drew Anderson as the QB3 there, if I'm not mistaken? And so, yeah, like, I mean, I think – this is a situation to avoid for sure. So maybe it doesn't really matter except for showdown slates where you feel like you have to nail it, in which case, I think it's a simple game theory question at that point. You know, you want exposure to both these guys, but I think I would be surprised to see Sloter, you know, handle every one of the dropbacks for this team. And then this passing game is just kind of a mess. Like we're not even seeing like consistent route runners in this offense. So it's tough to know where to go. It's just been, you know, whoever kind of has the hot hand, I guess. Like you're seeing even Arcanado, it seems like he and Van Der Esch are playing these complementary roles where only one of them's on the field at the same time. So like they tend to add up to roughly 100% of the routes. You saw Rano Hall, like a guy who was listed as the wide receiver one, like, before the season started, which was a weird observation because we thought this guy was a defensive back then. But he's back and he's playing, and you know, he's actually he got 38% of the routes last week. Maybe that was his first week back in action. Maybe that could grow. So like I'm just looking at it as lottery tickets, I think, at this point. But there's nobody there who topped 60% of the routes run in week 5. So other than Sal Cannella tight end, but none of the receivers did. So I just can't get there. You know, like I said, it's the same thing with San Antonio. You're really just filling out the last roster spot. And in that case, give me a guy like Hall potentially who may have upside. Like he's the mystery box, right?
Yeah. I'm with you there. I like the Hall take. I actually thought about writing like a quick hit blurb on him just because I thought like in, you know, watching the film, he looked pretty explosive. So he might be, you know, they're the only guy on this offense that can actually, give them a spark. It, you know, I said last week, it feels like they're just hitting randomize on these route shares.
Oh my gosh.
Chris, do you have any takes on these wide receivers, or is this just an avoid spot?
No, I think you guys covered it. It's you're not really getting to these guys unless you're playing a ton of lineups.
Yeah. with you there. Backfield should be pretty straightforward. Like I said, I mean, with Kenneth Farrow on IR, like Davion Smith, I mean, it's, you know, it's tricky to know exactly how much, but I, you know, I think it's safe to say he's going to play at least 65% of the snaps. He, I mean, he could push for 85%. Chris, I'll throw it over to you. Do you like Davion Smith? I mean, it's just, it's tough. You know, he's expensive. Bad. He's 7,800. He doesn't project very well. He doesn't look good. Yeah. Do you think you're going to be able to get there?
He's just not good. He's just so inefficient. He's like, it's a touchdown or bust play in the lowest over under total of the slate. And the guy that can't average more than like 2.5 yards per carry. So it's, does not feel good. I'd so much rather get up to any of those other guys that are, you know, not too much more expensive. I'm probably pretty much not playing him.
Yeah, you find, you know, $1,000 more or $1,500 more, like, yeah, you can get a way better play. Justin, any interest in Davion Smith?
Well, I would just like to apologize to the audience for the last 10 minutes talking about this game, Broncos and Renegades. You deserve those last 10 minutes back, guys. Yeah. I'm sorry, but no, we're not getting to Davion Smith, not too frequently.
All right. I'm glad we managed to get through that game in only 10 minutes. All right. We have a Monday Night Football game on this slate. This was super exciting. I actually didn't realize it was a Monday Night Football game until I did the show sheet last night. And it's the best game of the season. Houston Roughnecks at the DC Defenders. Kickoff is Monday night at 7 p.m. Total here is 42. DC is favored by 2.5. Justin, I'll start with you. Are there any bets you like on this game?
I like Houston money line here. I think, once again, you're talking about a coin flip type game. Houston got punched in the mouth last week. How do they respond? Obviously, they lost their best player, which is, you know, certainly worth a few points, I think, given how he's played. But, you know, we stand for AJ Smith, right? The guy's brilliant. I think he gives Greg Williams fits on the Defenders' defense. And we haven't seen, like, I don't feel like we haven't seen Tamu and that offense have to really deal with like major adversity to come back and win a game. So like, I think there's a lot of paths towards a Houston win. So if I can get plus money on that side, is intriguing to me.
Yeah, I really like that take, actually. I think, and I'll need to double check this, but I think like some of the offshores like Bovada are actually listing some alternate spreads for these games, you know, like right before kickoff. And I sort of like, I've kind of viewed DC this season as like the Baltimore Ravens, where, you know, they're really great when the, you know, the game's close or they're playing from ahead. But as soon as they get down, you know, it's, things can get pretty dicey. They just can't throw the ball. Yeah. I think a Houston alternate spread, like, you know, Houston, like -7 or something like that could be a little interesting, especially if you can get, I don't know, +200. I'm not sure exactly how they'd price that. I might be tempted there. Chris, any betting takes for this game?
Yeah, I'm on the Houston side as well. I like that call if you do see an alternate line, because, yeah, there's paths to them winning by double digit points, really, if they really get ahead.
For sure. Yeah. The aggressive defensive coordinator versus the genius offensive coordinator in AJ Smith, I think, could be a recipe for just a ton of points for Houston. Before we get into the fantasy side, injuries, things are relatively clean. On the DC side, we have tight end Ethan Wolf, who's dealing with an ankle injury, and running back Raquel Armstead, who's dealing with a calf injury. They've both been limited in practice this week. I remember hearing Ethan Wolf's injury was supposed to be a 2-week absence. He's already missed two games, so I'm kind of leaning towards him playing. Armstead seems very up in the air. I really don't have a big lean there. I kind of think he goes, because, you know, last week he didn't practice at all and sat. This week he's at least getting some limited sessions in. At the same time, though, I wouldn't be surprised if the team, you know, kind of reduced his role a bit more, just because, you know, Abram Smith looked amazing last week. And, you know, Armstead may not be 100%. And then things look clean on the Houston side right now. No news there other than, you know, Jontre Kirkland being ruled out for the season. A really tough blow there. We expect Justin Smith to slide right into that outside wide receiver role. The team also signed, I believe it was Tavon Salter. He's going to fill in the old Justin Smith role. So expect him to get, you know, maybe 8 or 10 routes per game on the outside. And then they signed Jakari Robertson, who's actually a really exciting player. Just looking at, you know, his PFF grades from college and stuff, this dude was a force at Wake Forest, I believe. I wrote him up as a guy, you know, neither of those two players, Salter or Robertson, are in the player pool this week. So that's kind of just a note for, you know, week 7 and beyond. But I know, I think Justin has some thoughts on Roberson.
Yeah, man. Roberson was a Hereford County High School alum, so shout out to the Bears of Hereford County. We are not a football factory by any means, so whenever somebody actually gets to a D1 program, it's kind of a big deal, and everybody keeps an eye on him. So I got super excited. I was like up with my kids at 3 a.m. or something, and I saw the transaction updated in my app, and so I was pretty pumped about that. That made me pretty happy. But I think the guy could play. I think he mistimed his draft situation a little bit coming out of Wake. There was some COVID stuff going on about that same time too, but he was a super efficient player. And then once you reach a certain age threshold, the NFL is not super interested in you as a prospect. So hopefully, like, this is the ideal type of guy who can come in, make a name for himself. But anyway, not in the player pool. We don't have to spend too much time on him. But I am excited about the fact that this game is on Monday night. And I thought it was smart of the XFL to do a Monday night game, especially this weekend with March Madness. I wish they had done it last weekend. Because the time slots were really all over the place. It was, you're competing against, you know, one of sports fans' like favorite weekends of the year. Yeah. And I think that's just part of how they've chosen to coordinate their season. But I think having these Monday night games where there's not at least the men's side of the action going on those nights is probably a pretty smart move.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this was the highest viewed game of the season. And, you know, mm-hmm. that's great news, because casual fans tuning in are going to get to see the two best teams of the year. One final note on Roberson. I can't believe we're spending this much time on a guy who isn't in the player pool, but he projects as a slot, and the Houston slot situation is like wide open. So if he's, you know, 3K in like week 7, week 8, that's going to be a guy that I'm super interested in, because I think he could push for a big route share if, you know, he's as talented as we believe. But let's talk about the guys who are actually in the player pool for this week. Starting with the Houston side of things, it really doesn't feel like anyone's going to get to Brandon Silvers. And, you know, he's not necessarily a bad play. He just doesn't project as a strong value. Chris, what do you think about Brandon Silvers as a contrarian option? And how are you feeling about some of these wide receivers?
I feel like I always go back and forth on what I think of Silvers week to week, because I constantly am like, yeah, he's on the best offense in the league. Like, he should be a guy you want. But then his ceiling just seems so capped compared to some of the other QBs, with McDonald being as involved as he is. And this week, I think I'm leaning towards his ceiling's going to be too capped, and I'd rather play some of the other guys. I'll probably still have some lineups with him, but I don't think I'm going to go crazy with Silver's lineups this week. The receivers, yeah, they're Justin Smith is, we expect to play a whole lot more based off last week. He'll probably be pretty popular because of it. Burnett, I think, is pretty interesting as a leverage play because he's expensive, and I don't think anyone's really projecting him to get more work with Kirkland out. But there's a world where he gets a few more targets a game, and, you know, he's the guy in the end zone, and he could be the receiver you want stacked with Silvers, or not stacked at all. Travel Harris is a good play as well. Cedric Bird could play. Cedric Bird is a guy that I also think could get a lot more work with Kirkland out. I'm curious what you guys think between him and Justin Smith. See the biggest bump in ownership that they've seen the past few weeks.
I mean, I think it's definitely Justin Smith. I mean, the issue with Bird is, like, they rotate these slot receivers a lot. And also, Bird has the lowest ADOT on the team, so he's going to need like a ton of volume to get there. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that I don't really like. I legit like love Justin Smith. I would, if it weren't for Lance Lenoir and, like, you know, Orlando kind of figuring out their quarterback stuff, I would honestly consider locking Justin Smith in. Jontre Kirkland's role was worth about 6.5 targets and 19 DraftKings points per game. Even if you think, you know, Justin Smith is 80% of the player that Kirkland is, I mean, that's still like super juicy. The other thing with Smith is, like, they love throwing him these deep balls. I'm pretty confident he's the fastest player on the team, or at least the fastest receiver on the team. That dude's got some wheels. So I don't think the skill drop off from Kirkland to Justin Smith is as big as people think. I mean, the coaches love Justin Smith. Like, AJ Smith has talked about Justin Smith quite a bit. Like, in multiple interviews, he's been like, I love Justin Smith. I think he's super talented. Justin, I'm really curious on your thoughts here on these, you know, Brandon Silvers is a contrarian play, and also these wide receivers. How are you looking at this?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it doesn't have to be any more difficult than you want to make it. And Justin Smith literally played every snap that Jontre Kirkland did not play last week. And so that's as that's as solid of an indicator for usage and sort of how they view positional depth charts within their wide receiver room. You know, Jontre Kirkland plays a different position than Deonte Burnett plays. They're both wide receivers. And I don't know what exactly they'll call their terminology, but, you know, Jontre Kirkland and Justin Smith were obviously, you know, working from the same depth chart on the same position. So, yeah, I think it's Smith easily here. And the fact that we basically have a game to prove it now already with week five, you are going to see some snap rates start to venture up a little bit. I'm a little surprised, like, that Nick Holly's role sort of vanished the way it did. But I guess, like, you have Putman, who has – you know, stepped up a little bit here lately. You know, Cedric Bird had that one weird spike week where he played 80% of the routes, and then it's Treveil Harris. So yeah, I don't mind going to Bird as well. You know, Harris is a guy I sometimes have, he just never ends up in my builds for some reason. I don't know why that is, but yeah, I think Smith is the clear number two behind Burnett. And, you know, Chris, you made a good point about just sort of adjusting sort of that targets per route run type of expectation for Burnett. Like, yeah, he didn't have a super stellar number there, but Jontre Kirkland was the other guy, you know, competing for targets there. Once that competition decreases a little bit, it makes sense to think Burnett could be a little bit more involved. So that may be an adjustment I make so that I get to him a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a ton of sense. I mean, it just really feels to me like this entire Houston offense is going to go overlooked outside of Justin Smith. And, you know, we've seen with their offense coordinator situation with, you know, I think it's a 72% pass rate in neutral situations. They lead the league. They're throwing more in neutral situations than Seattle. I mean, we could see a ton of points here from Houston. And, you know, Silvers is going to be 5% owned. Like, I'm definitely going to want some, you know, like Silvers, Burnett, Justin Smith stacks, you know, in like the $15, for example, really like that. And yeah, I can't exaggerate how much I just love Justin Smith as a play. I actually think he's probably one of the best plays of the season. Okay. The running back situation, it seems to be, I mean, they had three guys active last week, but it's really just a two horse race here in Houston. We've got Max Borgi, who's, you know, handling most of the carries and is, you know, getting about four or five targets out of the backfield every week. And, you know, is obviously the favorite for red zone work, given that the other running back, Bryson Alline, only weighs 165 pounds, but I mean, man, he looks really explosive and he's seeing pretty solid receiving work too. You know, the problem though is, you know, Alline's 5,800, it really makes him tough to fit in. He's just not projecting as a solid value. And, you know, the same can be said for Borgi. Like he's just too expensive. You know, it feels like people, you know, it's much easier to click on Brian Hill and Abram Smith. Kind of feels like, you know, kind of similar to Brandon Silvers, Borgi's going to be like 5%. I'd be pretty shocked if he was, you know, double digits. Justin, I'll throw it over to you. How are you going to handle this Houston running back situation? Because it feels like there could be some good potential leverage there. It's just tough given the way projections are sitting.
It is tough. I think I'm going to have a hard time getting to Borgi. Just that salary with essentially a comfier option and Brian Hill and Abram Smith right there in the same neck of the woods. Yeah. It's just tough. It's going to be tough for me to get there, even if there is an ownership discount. And then you're not going to know about the status of Alline or Lee until game time. So if you did want to play the sort of number two there, I'm maybe not quite as sold that Lee is fully buried on the depth chart. Like, I mean, I guess maybe I'm leaving a little bit of a light on for him. But this is a situation I'm approaching sequentially, like throughout the course of the week. Like I'm probably not starting with any of those guys in my lineup.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. Chris, how are you feeling about this backfield? Do you think you're going to be able to get to these guys?
Yeah. Borgi is, it's pretty much, I'm going to have to like really need the leverage in my lineup for me to want to put Borgi in there. I mean, if I'm already getting different enough other places, I'm not going to feel the need to force Borgi into lineups, but he's got a ceiling that he could have the highest ceiling on the slate. It's just, he's never going to project well for like a medium outcome. So not much, if any, just depends on how the rest of my lineups ending up get built ownership wise.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. Justin, I kind of lean towards Dejon Lee being buried after the 3% snap share we saw last week. But at the same time, I mean, I would not be surprised if he was more involved. So, or I mean, he could just be a healthy scratch. But yeah, I definitely like the idea of, like, if you're playing Jaquez Patrick in a lineup, like, just leaving the extra salary so that you can get to a lean.
Exactly.
I think that's a decently sharp take there. All right, moving on to the DC side of things. We saw in week five, Derek King only played like five snaps. Jordan Te'amu, it seems like the team's getting a little more comfortable with him. I think he's playing a little better. The problem, though, I mean, we've seen a lot of Te'amu in spring football. He's super streaky. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw King's role climb up a little bit. At the same time, though, I mean, you know, Te'amu projects decently well industry-wide. I mean, certainly better than a guy like Brandon Silvers. Justin, I'll start with you here. You think you're going to get too much Te'amu on the four-game slate?
I think so. And one of the reasons why is, like Silvers, he does have a ceiling. You know, if things were to line up exactly the right way. And it's currently capped by, just like Silvers is capped by, Cole McDonald and Borgie when they get in tight. Like, the opportunity is there if Te'amu ends up airing it out and is fully trusted in the offense, which, you know, last week it seemed like they took a very positive step forward into trusting him a bit more. Yeah. But he's just going to have to score from 20 yards out, you know, like, that's going to be it. But as a quarterback in a GPP, like, perfect. Yeah. Sign me up for the guy who's scoring their touchdowns from 20 yards out. And that helps tell me a story about the rest of my lineup. That gets me to, you know, Lucky Jackson or Chris Blair or Josh Hammond or one of those guys, maybe one of the tight ends if we get, you know, Ethan Wolf ruled out, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think I want to have a little bit of a Hail Mary option heading into Monday night should I need it. So maybe, like, the approach here is that you start with, you know, if I'm building a single lineup, maybe you start with a Silvers build, and it's, you know, Silvers and Justin Smith and Deontay Burnett. And that maybe you swap that. And maybe it includes Abram Smith on the other side. And then if you're chasing, then all of a sudden you swap Silvers and Burnett to, you know, Jordan Te'amu and Lucky Jackson. You swap Abram Smith over to Borgie, and now you've got a super contrarian lineup. Like, there's not going to be many Jordan Te'amu lineups.
Yeah, I really love that take. I thought that was super sharp. Chris, how are you handling, like, these DC wide receivers? I mean, at this point, I think it's safe to say Lucky Jackson is the top play. But yeah, I'm curious if you like any of these other guys here.
Yeah, Lucky Jackson is definitely the top play. I really like Lucky Jackson. I think he's actually a decent receiver. He's just in a super run heavy offense. They like to get him screens and stuff. He feels like he's got a big game in him if it eventually does come. Hammond runs a ton of routes, and so Chris Blair's been trending up as well. So they're fine too, but I'm not really looking to use a ton of DC receivers in a lineup. So at most, I'm picking one guy, and because I like Lucky Jackson the most, it's going to be almost always him with maybe a little bit of the other two.
Yeah, I mean, Lucky Jackson, you know, he might be 15, maybe 20%. But especially if you're playing like Te'amu, I really wouldn't be worried too much about ownership there, because, yeah, people really probably won't get to Te'amu very much. The backfield here is, you know, really just a one-man show after what we saw last week. Obviously, you know, Armstead status matters a lot for Abram Smith's projection. But at the same time, I mean, you know, we're only talking about a few points here if Armstead ends up being active. I mean, Armstead snaps were already starting to trend down a little bit. Abram Smith clearly has the grip on the backfield. And I mean, last week, you know, 218 rushing yards, 43.5 DraftKings points. We kind of already talked up Brian Hill as a better play. But Chris, I'll start with you. Abram Smith, I mean, pretty clear running back too, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. And especially if Armstead is out, he's just going to have a huge workload. And, you know, there's not much, like, it's going to be hard for any other running back to really match his bell cow workload other than Brian Hill. You kind of do have to pick, though, if you want to play Abram Smith or you want to play the Seattle passing attack with Pearson or DiNucci. So, I mean, I think that's the big point of this slate, is really deciding how you're fitting in Smith, maybe Brian Hill. He's a little bit cheaper, so it's not as bad. And then what you do with the Seattle passing attack, because you're gonna, if you're putting those three or four guys in your lineup, you're really gonna have to put a Lance Lenoir, Justin Smith. Like, you're pretty much filling the rest of the spots for you, and that might be a little tough and more and very popular among lineups.
Yeah. I definitely get that. I think it's safe to say that Aaron Smith would be roughly equal with Brian Hill as a play if Armstead's ruled out. I mean, you know, 90% snap share and like every single backfield carry is pretty valuable there. Justin, you have any Aaron Smith takes for us?
Yeah, no, not really, other than I expect this to be a much more difficult matchup for him this week. Like, I was really on him last week. I played a lot of Abram Smith, and that probably, I mean, the dude obviously broke the slate, so that's probably why I had a decent week. But I don't think the matchup's there as much this week. You know, it's nice to see that there is that explosive element there. But to me, it's just kind of let the projections do their work. We know this game can go a lot of different ways. So I doubt I want to allow him to be like, I definitely want more Brian Hill than Abram Smith this week.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I think, you know, I wouldn't be shocked. DC, you know, I'm or Houston, I'm pretty confident in their coaches, both offensive and defensive. I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Houston, you know, put up one of the best defensive fights against DC that we've seen this season. Yeah. Because DC, I mean, like, you watch their offense and it's like they should not be this successful. It feels kind of like they're running a high school playbook. Like, exactly, it's just read options and screens and then the occasional go ball. Like, it's really not like a complex offense. So I wouldn't be surprised if Wade Phillips could cook something up to kind of shut him down a little bit. But yeah, any additional thoughts on this game before we move on to our final segment, guys?
I don't think so.
All righty. So normally we wrap things up with some macro slate thoughts, but I think we did a really good job covering that throughout the show. So instead, we're going to ask Justin, who is the Showdown Master, some questions about XFL Showdown, which is something that, you know, I'm a pretty decent main slate player, both NFL and XFL, but I've always struggled with Showdown a bit. I might be overthinking it. I'm not sure. So I wanted to fire some questions Justin's way to see if I could improve my Showdown ROI a little bit. So Justin, starting things off in NFL, you know, dupes and ownership are pretty significant concerns. But in XFL, I'm curious how much that matters. Is your only concern submitting the best teams? Or are you letting assumptions about ownership dictate your exposures in some capacity?
Yeah, no, I still think dupes are a pretty significant issue, especially if you're a person who's interested in calculating a positive EV long term. Now, obviously, if you just wanted to put, you know, your $12 into the Showdown contest of choice and have a fun sweat, like, by all means, go ahead and put a negative EV lineup in that has some win equity and some sweat equity along the way. Like, it's not as much fun pulling for the number three receiver to be the guy who breaks the slate. But I mean, that's one of the recipe or secrets, you know, to that type of success long term. Now, so for XFL DFS, like, the first thing you got to think about is prize pool contest size. Like, this isn't the Millie Maker type of DraftKings Showdown for NFL. Like, it's not. There's not as many people. The prizes aren't as big. You should be like aiming for doubles and triples and not home runs and grand slams. It's like, so that to me is kind of the first thing. And quite often what will happen is, much like I sort of was mentioning about optimals not always being anywhere close to winning lineups, for classic slates, the same is true for XFL Showdown. Like, you don't need the absolute nuts a lot of times to take down first place. And to be profitable long term, you got to be okay losing on the nights where you do have to have all those things happen. So that's a tough thing for people, myself included, to come to grips with, is like, some nights, if I play a proper strategy, I lose. And that's okay. Like, because we're not playing a one slate sample, we're playing hundreds or thousands of slates, right? So that's kind of it. Like, zoom out, that would be sort of recommendation number one. And so once we come to the understanding that you don't need the nuts, a lot of XFL DFS is about avoiding landmines as much as it is finding the right players. And so you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had like a really good XFL lineup, but it has like one guy's glaring zero just standing out. It's like, oh gosh, did it give me like two catches for 12 yards and we're shipping this thing? But yeah, no, of course that doesn't work that way. So one way to get quick and easy points is defenses. Like, defenses are should be really staples in your XFL Showdown lineups. Going double D, is there's really nothing wrong with that. And then if you go double D in the flex and you're mixing around different quarterback and receiver combinations, a lot of times you can pretty easily fade a lot of the running backs, even though there's, you know, some guaranteed volume there. Like, that's another thing to remember, is just sort of scoring. You know, if you have a receiver get five catches for 50 yards, that's better than a running back who has 85 yards on the ground and no touchdown, right? So, yeah, just understanding that. And then lastly, I'd say is the captain spot and understanding how to deploy that safely. Yeah, I think really what you want to do is in every lineup, either be dedicated towards leaving some amount of salary on the table or going a little bit off the board with your captain spot. Those would be the two probably easiest, like simple rules that you could implement to assure that you're playing, you know, positive EV type lineups. And so there's room for improvement from myself for sure to follow some of those instructions. It can be really enticing to simply play like some of the most highest projected and highest frequented lineups in our simulations and stuff. But overall, like I'm trying to do a better job of filtering towards lineups that don't get me to a player with a zero as much as I can help it.
Would you say that the field is just underutilizing defenses in general? Because I've been pretty surprised at how low some of these defense ownerships have been in some of these showdown slates.
100%. Like, I mean, even in slates where the defense isn't going nuts, like still having that like 7 points from the defense, like the floor for defenses in this league is pretty high. In fact, I probably underproject our defenses on our site, but yeah, they're banking you usually 5, 6, 7 points at not a very high, you know, premium for price. And it allows you to go in and make whatever team basically that you want to make. Like the other thing is like the pricing is all over the place. So there's no reason not to leave $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 on the table. Like you really have no excuse to be playing multi-duped lineups, you know, in this type of tournament.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. Chris, did you have anything for Justin here?
Yeah, is there so with NFL Showdown, people usually talk about all kinds of certain rules that they follow. Like if you put a captain pass catcher, have the QB in the flex. If you've got the QB as captain, have at least two pass catchers in the flex. Do rules like that apply in the XFL, do you think? Or is there different rules because of the lower scoring, the multi QBs on the same teams in the same game, stuff like that?
The platooning situations are a nightmare, man. Like we talk about, like if you want to build a lineup for this Houston DC game that we just got done talking about, I don't have good advice because I've been getting burned by De'Aaron King every week. It seems like a guy who it's tough to tell yourself the story like De'Aaron King and Jordan Ta'amu can both be successful in the same game. Like usually they're super inversely correlated. XFL, it tends to be able to work out. You know, it's probably a signal for a favorable game script if they both kind of get there. But yeah, so those platoon situations really can be pretty tough. But we've seen that be successful, especially for DC. Now, if you take a team that doesn't have a rushing element, take like San Antonio, for example, if you think there might be a two-quarterback situation there, or Arlington, where there might be a two-quarterback situation there, like I'm not as keen to play two guys there. Just play one guy max, and you maybe not even need that guy. So, yeah, that's definitely a good point. Now, I would tend towards following those pretty simple rules. Like, you know, if wide receiver and the captain, definitely go ahead and match them up with the quarterback. There's really no reason not to, especially given sort of like the lack of leveling that's required in XFL DFS. Like you. In NFL, there's this whole meta about like you want to make the best bad lineup that you can or the worst good lineup that you can, whatever, you know, yeah. Wherever you sit on that. And this, like, I think you just want to like omit the, you know, 30 or so most popular combinations and just play the best among them.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. My next question was going to be about those dicey quarterback situations, but I think you covered that pretty well. Chris, did you have anything else for Justin before we wrap things up?
No, I'm good.
Awesome. Justin, where can people find your stuff?
Well, hey, can I do one quick news break here?
Oh, because, yeah,
go we just for got it. Some information that Travis Toivonen and Kalen Ballage are out this week for San Antonio. So we can go ahead and start tossing Jacquez Patrick into those lineups, boys. Victor Bolden, we didn't talk about him, but he's questionable for Arlington. He'll be making his debut this week.
Yeah, I wouldn't anticipate a huge role for Bolden off the rip, but I do think he's immediately their best receiver. So I'm kind of excited about him, you know, for like week 7 and beyond. Patrick is going to project as a really strong play, but just remember, guys, that the floor is pretty low there. He could definitely still fail. I mean, Hilleman could vulture his touchdowns too.
Yeah.
So, Chris, do you have any takes on our breaking news?
No, it's still the lowest over under in the slate by a mile. Just remember that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good take. All right, Justin, where can people find your stuff?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at JustinFreeman18. You can find all of my work at runthesims.com. Obviously, we specialize in football, starting to venture out into some other sports. So if you're into Formula One or maybe MMA coming soon for our site. So please be sure to come check us out. The water's warm. Really appreciate what you guys are doing at Fantasy Points. You got a stellar reputation. I've got a couple buddies who are subscribers to the site and speak super highly of the work that you guys are putting out. When you kind of get into the business side, you don't get as much exposure to everywhere else as you'd like. And sometimes you can kind of not see everything that's out there. So super kudos to you guys and appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for coming on. It was definitely our best show of the season, and we'd absolutely love to have you back. Final question before, we sign off here. Better snack, peanut butter or beef jerky? This has been a hotly debated topic on our show previously.
Well, let's put it into the debate, shall we? This is peanut butter all the way. I had been years without having beef jerky until about like 2 weeks ago. My wife and I stopped at a gas station. She wanted it. Like, she was the beef jerky gal for some reason. She wanted it. I had some and immediately regretted the entire decision. I don't really see what the appeal is. Maybe somebody can explain that to me, but peanut butter, I mean, savory, you got varieties, you've got smooth, you've got crunchy, goes great with peanut butter and jelly, goes great with milk, put it on a cracker. Like, if it's versatile, is it a liquid? Is it a solid? Who knows? Like, it's everything. It's like the Swiss Army knife is the Christian McCaffrey of snacks.
Well, I will just argue that the appeal of beef jerky is that it's the only meat you can really eat on the go. I still maintain that the ultimate football guy snack when you're grinding film at like 1 a.m. is coffee and beef jerky. But alrighty, guys, this was an awesome show. Justin, thank you so much. For Chris, for myself, for Justin, for producer Sean behind the glass, thank you so much for tuning into the week 6 edition of the Fantasy Points XFL Breakdown. And I hope to see all you guys at the top of the leaderboard.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.